Okey-dokey. Good vacht, everybody. Parshas Kisisa, of course, the amongst the many, many important aspects of the parsha is the Egel Hazav. I'd like to spend some time this morning talking about the Egel and some very critical aspects of the Egel, what we could learn from the Egel, try to understand a little bit better where Bnei Yisrael were, where Moshe was, what was Aaron thinking, amongst other aspects of the Egel. But I want to start sort of backwards this week. And go to the end of the story first, and then go backwards. And the reason for that is I saw a marvelous pshat that really speaks to me very much, and you'll see in a minute why, from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. If you are in Parshas Kisisa, I don't know if you're using the Stone Chumash or not, but on page 498, which is in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Yotes, chapter 32, verse 19, there is a word there that I'd like to focus on. And this is where Moshe actually smashes the tablets, breaks the luchos, and Moshe Rabbeinu says as follows and does the following thing. Pasuk says, "Vayhi kasher korav el hamachna," as Moshe came closer to the camp, "Vayares ha'egel u'mecholos," and Moshe saw the egel, he saw this golden calf, u'mecholos, and the dancing. And we'll get back to the dancing in a little bit. "Vayichar af Moshe," and Moshe became very angry upon seeing what he saw. "Vayashlech miyado es haluchos, vayishaber osam tachas ahar." Moshe threw down the tablets and broke them underneath the mountain. So this, of course, is the end of the story. This is the makeh bepatish. This is the finale. Everything that had occurred ultimately concludes with Moshe breaking, smashing the luchos. But I'd like to take a look at one word, and one simple word in this pasuk, and that is the word mem yud dalet vav. You all saw that word, right? Now, there are two ways potentially to read that word, okay? It's four letters, mem yud dalet vav, and actually on this pasuk there's something called a kri uksiv. A kri uksiv means that there's one way that you could actually read the word, and there's another way that it's actually articulated and read. Kri is the way that it's read. Ksiv is the way that it's written. The way that it's written is the way miyado. Vayashlech miyado. Moshe threw it from his hand in singular. However, the kri, the way that the Balkriya reads it, is miyadov, from his hands. So in Lashon HaKodesh, the word miyado can also be read miyadov. So what did Moshe do? And why is it significant? Why is it written one way and read a different way? Is it that Moshe threw the tablets, the luchos, from one hand, miyado? Or did he do it miyadov, from both of his hands, right? Only in the Hebrew language, in Lashon HaKodesh, could you have the very same word with the exact same letters that could mean two very different things. So did Moshe throw the luchos miyado from one hand in singular, or did Moshe throw it from both hands, miyadov, from both of his hands? Listen to the words of Yisrael Salanter, and as you hear them, you'll understand why when I saw this on Shabbos, it was so powerful. The Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he heard, when he saw what was occurring, and he understood that Bnei Yisrael were forfeiting their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu upon creating, fashioning, building the Egel HaZav, Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, look, I'm holding these luchos. There are five mitzvos Bein Adam L'Makom on the first side, the first tablet, and five mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chavero on the second tablets, right? The first five, Anochi Hashem, Lo Yilach Elohim Acher Malpanai, Lo Sasa Pesel. The first five commandments in the Aseret Divos are all about the relationship between man and God, culminating in the fifth commandment, which is the commandment of Kabed Esavicha Vesimecha. The second tablets, the second luchos, we're referring to Lo Sirtzach, Lo Sinaf, Lo Sana Berechei Sheker, all of the mitzvos bin Adam L'Chaver, interpersonal law. Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself as follows, I'm carrying these luchos, these two tablets. And when I see what Bnei Yisrael did wrong, what did they do wrong? They only sinned and they only transgressed their relationship between man and God. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu had a havamin, had an a priori thought, I'm only going to smash one of the tablets. Because what's so bad? All they did was commit the sin between man and God. I could hold on to the second set of tablets and Bnei Yisrael could continue keeping their relationship between man and man. Why should that relationship be severed? Allow them to keep the second set of tablets between Bein Adam l'Chaveiro. And then Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, that's an impossibility. Because how can it be that you could divorce, separate the mitzvos bein adam l'makom from the mitzvos bein adam l'chavero? They work together. They work hand in hand. It's an impossibility just to give them the second half, the last five. Lo sirtzach, lo sinaf, lo sana b'recha etchaker. I can't just give them the tablets that have the dealings between man and man, the interpersonal relationships. It's only half of the picture. It's only half of the coin. Therefore, even though they've only sinned in one particular area, the second of the commandments of Lo Yilech Elohim Acher Malpanai, even though they've created, fashioned, built this Egel Hazav, and really they should be able to keep the second half, the second five from 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, the second set of the Luchos. Nonetheless, Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, it's an impossibility, because chad belo chad lo sagi, you can't have just one half, you need both together. And thus, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter explains, that's the pshat in this word, and in the kri uksiv. Originally, Moshe said to himself, you know what I'm going to do? Vayashlech miyado. He's only going to throw one tablet from one hand. He's just going to drop and let the first set, the first five, the first luach break and to smash that. But then when Moshe understood that these two things have to work together, the first five, Bein Adam L'Makom, must work together with the second five, the Bein Adam L'Makom, Moshe Vayashlech Miyadav, he threw both from his hand, both the first five and the second five, and therefore the Baal Kriya yesterday read, Vayashlech Miyadav, he threw it from his hands. He needed to lift both of them up, to raise them both up, threw them both from his hands. So of course, when I saw this pshat from Yisrael Salanter, I was very excited, because certainly it speaks about something that's very close to my heart, and that is the mitzvos bein adam l'chavero. It doesn't work. It doesn't work that there could just be the five mitzvos bein adam l'chavero without the mitzvos bein adam l'makom. It's an impossibility to be a religion, to be yiddit, to have our standing as Jews, and to have a Torah that's just focused on bein adam l'chavero if you don't have the bein adam l'makom. It's an impossibility. You can't have lo sirtzach, don't murder. You can't have lo sinaf, don't be engaged in illicit relationships. You can't have lo sana b'recha ketchaker, don't swear falsely, if you don't have the basic tenets of Shabbos, of belief in Hashem. It can't just be a religion that's based upon good feelings and the big tent, taking care of people, interpersonal relationships, if you don't have the safeguard and if you don't have the backbone and if you don't have Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzisicha Meretz Mitzrayim Bebeis Avadim. And of course, vice versa is also true. You can't have the mitzvos bein adam l'makom. You can't have Anochi Hashem Elokecha. You can't have Lo Yilecha Elohim Acherim Al Panai. You can't have the first five if you don't have the latter five. And therefore, you see very powerfully and very clearly here something that's so crucial and so critical about the Aseres Hadibros, about everything that we stand for. And that is bein adam l'makom, bein adam l'chavero. No five are more important than the other five. And that's so true in the proof that we see here in this parasha, that Moshe was unable just to smash the first half. The only way is if both go down. And you can't just act appropriately in the area of Bein Adam L'Makom and forfeit your relationships with others. And you can't just focus on your relationships between man and man and not focus on your relationship between man and God. Both have to work together. And thus the relationship that the Bnei Yisrael severed with God also severed their relationship in terms of the latter five. And it's for that reason the kri and the ksiv, the word miyado, as written in singular, the Moshe threw it from one hand, ultimately is read miyadav from both of his hands. I'd like, based upon that pshat of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, is to take a look at the end of all of Chamisha Chumshei Torah and share with you a fascinating pasuk, a Rashi that really speaks to this as well. Let's just try to paint a little bit of a picture here to begin to appreciate multiple things and the challenges of the Egel. Now, when we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu smashing, breaking the Luchos, let's understand that this was no simple feat. Moshe Rabbeinu had a relationship, of course, a very deep relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was on top of Har Sinai 40 days and 40 nights in the cocoon and in the spiritual laboratory of Har Sinai, meditating, learning, and understanding what exactly the Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from the Jewish people. And Moshe ultimately was the one who was supposed to transmit all of those instructions to the Jewish people. Bnei Israel, just 40 days ago, and really just to paint the picture in a really stark way, were the recipients of the Torah. They said, Naaseh v'nishma, we will do and we will hear. That means the Nasa they did, they accepted the Torah. Now is the point in the time that they're supposed to study and understand, to teach and accept. And 40 days later, everything literally comes crashing down. Literally. The entire luchos are smashed and are on the floor and are broken. How could that be? How could Bnei Yisrael fall so quickly? You're talking about a nation that saw Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, Matan Torah. This was the most miraculous of events. And just 40 days ago, everything they saw came to its rightful conclusion. Kadosh Baruch Hu told us, when you leave Egypt, prepare, get ready, you're going to serve God on this mountain. And here Bnei Yisrael reach this mountain, they receive the Aseres HaDibros, and with absolute confirmation, and with very strong intention, accept the Torah and say Naaseh v'nishma. And because of a small little error, they miscalculate when it was that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to come and return from the mountain, and they're a few hours off, everything falls apart. Everything. And just imagine that for a moment, really, just to think about this so seriously. Here's the people that were working in Mitzrayim upwards of 200 years, preparing to be released and to be free. Finally, they're free. They see such incredible, incredible miracles. And all of a sudden, so quickly, and we'll talk about this in a moment as well, everything falls apart. Everything falls apart. So we have to understand how Bnei Yisrael did what they did, but we also understand the pain and the struggle that Moshe must have had when Moshe was told to break the luchos. Think for a moment. Was it so simple? Was it so easy for Moshe to do that? And I want to read you a Medrash, because the Medrash says that Moshe indeed struggled with this. Should he break them? Should he not break them? Listen to the words of the Yalkut. The Yalkutim Kisisa says as follows. They saw that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to break the luchos, and they started running after him. There was a tug of war. As Moshe was coming down, Moshe held one side of Luchas, and the Zekanim, the 70 elders, held the other half. Moshe's physical prowess and strength overruled those of the 70 elders, and then Moshe smashed the Luchas. That means there's a fight, there's a tug of war. Think about it, all of Klal Yisrael, who were prepared to accept the Torah and did accept the Torah, Matan Torah, all of a sudden created a terrible anarchy. And the Shivim Zekanim, the elders, said, Moshe, you can't do this. You can't smash these luchos. We've worked so hard. We left Egypt. We crossed the Yamsuf. We saw the Aseres HaMakos. We reached Matan Torah. We were off a few hours. Don't do this. Don't break them. And this is the picture that's being painted, the struggle that Moshe Rabbeinu has and Klal Yisrael have at that moment. In light of that, I'd like to share with you something that gets overlooked on an annual basis. It's the last pasuk in the entire Torah. One would imagine that the last pasuk in the entire Torah should conclude, should end on a very upbeat and in a positive way. If you take a look in Parshas Zos HaBracha, and the reason I say it gets overlooked every year, because Simchas Torah Zos HaBracha, and it's a quick parsha, it's a short parsha, we rarely study Parshas Zos HaBracha. But if you look at the last pasuk in Parshas Zos HaBracha, you will be shocked as to what you will read. If you have the Stone Chumash, it's on page 1124. If you don't, it's the last pasuk in the entire Torah. Parsha Zos HaBracha, Perek Lamedalot, Pasuk Yudbeis. Listen to this pasuk. Ulechol hayara chazaka. Ulechol hamora hagadol asher asa Moshe le'enei kol Yisrael. Which means that Moshe Rabbeinu, all the strong hand, the awesome power that Moshe performed before the eyes of Bnei Yisrael. So the last psukim, this is after Moshe's death. Moshe dies 8 psukim prior to the last pasuk in the entire Torah. The Torah tells us that Moshe was the greatest prophet. Lo kam navi od b'yisoka Moshe. Nobody knew Moshe. Nobody had a prophecy the likes of Moshe. Moshe had a relationship with Hashem, panim al panim. Moshe performed miracles like nobody else. Now, what exactly is the meaning of this last pasuk? That Moshe performed great powers. Moshe was the strong hand and did so in front of all Yisrael. Listen to what Rashi says on each word on the last pasuk in the Torah. Ulechol hayad hachazaka. Rashi reads the pasuk literally. For all of the strong hand of Moshe. Rashi. Shekibel asatara beluchos biyada. Moshe lifted the luchos with his hands. They were not so light, as we'll see a little bit later. The luchos were very, very heavy. Ulechol hayad hachazaka. Moshe, very strong hands. Moshe lifted up the luchos. Ulechol hamora hagadol. The next statement in the pasuk, and he had an awesome power. What's this awesome power? Nisim ugvuro sheba midbar hagol v'nar. Moshe performed incredible miracles during the 40 years in the midbar. Le'ene kol Yisrael, the last three words in the entire Torah. This is what you have to listen to very carefully. Says Rashi, shenasu libo lishbor haluchos le'nehem. The last three words in the entire Torah tells us that what does it mean that Moshe did something miraculous, incredible, powerful in front of the Jewish people? He broke the luchos. Vashabrem leinechem, and I broke them in front of your eyes. Viskima dasa kadosh baruch hu ledaito, and God agreed with what Moshe did to break, to smash the luchos. Shenemar asher shibarta, a pasuk in our parsha, yasher kochacha shishibarta. Well done, Moshe. Yasher koach, that you broke the luchos. That means the last words, the last three words in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah that Moshe is given praise for, accolades of the highest level, is that Moshe broke the luchos. What a way to conclude Chamisha Chumshei Torah. What a way to refer to the strength, to the prowess, to the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Why does the Torah conclude with Parshas Kisisa? Why does the Torah conclude with Shviras Aluchos, with the smashing of the tablets? Why is that so significant in Moshe's resume, in Moshe's bio, for the legacy of Moshe Rabbeinu, the way we close Chamisha Chumshei Torah? We close our Chumash and turn back to Bereishis by thinking that Moshe's greatness is in the fact that he smashed, he broke, and he destroyed the Luchos. What does this show about Moshe Rabbeinu? What does this show about his leadership that we don't know? We talk about Moshe's leadership, Parshas Yisro, Sefer Shmos, Sefer Bamidbar. We never talk about Moshe's greatness in terms of breaking the luchos, but clearly we're missing something, because the Torah tells us that on a end note, the most important thing about Moshe's leadership is that Moshe broke the luchos. What's the significance? Mefarshei HaChumash, Darshanim and others are very, very busy trying to understand why is it that the Egel Hazav that we read about in our Parsha, Parshas Kisisa, is the subject of the last words in Parshas Zosa Bracha, and again, what does this teach us about Moshe? The simple understanding is the picture that we've painted, is to understand that Moshe, although he was given many, many challenges in his years of leadership, there was nothing more challenging than what he had to do. And what Moshe teaches us is that although we have built, although we have done so much, although I helped lead you out of Egypt, helped you cross the sea, brought you to Matan Torah, I'm willing for my legacy to be lost to save you. Because you did something terribly wrong. You made a terrible error. But nonetheless, I'm not in it for myself. It's true that I am going to be known as the person who brought the Torah to the Jewish people. It's referred to as Torah's Moshe. But nonetheless, Moshe is willing to break the luchos because what Klal Yisrael did. Moshe says, it doesn't make a difference. I'm doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And the ultimate leader is the leader that doesn't look out for their own glory, for their own success, but rather the greatness of a leader is looking out for the people, for the constituency, for the followers that the leader has. And in this circumstance, although Moshe Rabbeinu could have very easily agreed with the Zakenim, the Zakenim wanted Moshe not to break the Luchos, but Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's not going to work. Klal Yisrael are not in a place where they're supposed to be. And if they're not in a place where they're supposed to be, I am forced to break the luchos. And this is what Chazal say, bitula zohi kiyuma. That sometimes the nullification, sometimes the breaking of something in and of itself is the way to build. And we'll see that shortly as well. But let me reference the opinion of the Das Kanim and the Balei Tosfos. The Das Kanim and the Balei Tosfos are the collection of the Balei Tosfos, who have a commentary on the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, not such a well-known commentary. It's not often quoted, but it's an important commentary, and some of the classic Mikros Gedolos is found in the back. But the Das Kanim Balei Tosfos ask this question, why did Moshe Rabbeinu do this? And they ask even sharper question. They ask, why did Moshe have to break them? Moshe Rabbeinu maybe could have done something much easier. Just leave them aside. Why break them? Is it so important to break the luchos? Why not just save them for later? Why the necessity to fashion and to set up a new set of luchos? It could have been much simpler. We could have saved ourselves a lot of time. Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have gone up the mountain again to psol hashnei luchos avadim, to fashion the second set of luchos again. Why did Moshe have to break them? It would have been much nicer, much simpler, less dramatic. It would have been much easier just to hold them in abeyance and not to do so again. The Das Kanim says something amazing. Quotes the Gemara. The Gemara says that when it comes to the Korban Pesach, Bezras Hashem, we should be zochet to bring it this year, when Moshe Rabbeinu understood that when Klal Yisrael, the Pasuk says regarding the Korban Pesach, kol benecha lo yochal bo, that when a person who is a nachri, somebody who is not following properly the halachos, is prohibited from eating the Korban Pesach, so Moshe said a kal v'chomer. When it comes to the Korban Pesach, kol benecha lo yochal bo, if somebody individually has transgressed the sin and is prohibited from bringing the Korban Pesach, HaTorah kulo v'yisrael mishumadim l'achas kama v'kama, if the Jewish people are completely heretics and are completely acting out of order, how in the world can they keep any of the mitzvos of the Torah, and therefore I have to break the luchos? Say the Balei Tosfos, nonetheless, Moshe Rabbeinu, why break them? So listen to what the Das Kanim and the Balei Tosfos says. Moshe Rabbeinu, when you read the Pasuk, and we'll read the Pesukim momentarily, hears a lot of excitement and enthusiasm. And he understands that Bnei Yisrael are acting inappropriately, out of order. They are completely transgressing every sin. They are sinning with the Erev Rab. Vayares ha'egel u'mecholos. Moshe Rabbeinu sees that Bnei Yisrael have fashioned, have created, have built this egel, this golden calf. And he understands that his responsibility at this moment is to stop the Jewish people from sinning. Say the Balei Tosfos that as we began this year, the luchos were very, very heavy. Moshe Rabbeinu understood that if I'm to walk down the mountain carrying these luchos, it's not going to be so simple. It's going to take me longer to stop Bnei Yisrael from sinning. Imagine you're on a hike and you're carrying something heavy on your back, as opposed to not carrying something heavy on your back. It's going to take you a lot longer when you're carrying something on your back, as opposed to if you're not carrying something on your back. Moshe Rabbeinu says, my responsibility is to take care of my flock. I have to make sure they're not going to sin. And if I have the opportunity to save people quicker from sinning, it's worthwhile for me to break the luchos, to destroy the luchos, and to make sure that I'm able to save one or two more people from sinning. And therefore Moshe understood that it's in his best interest to break the luchos, to smash them, because if I break them and I drop them on the floor, it'll be quicker for me to get down the mountain and to protect my people. That's the sign of a leader. And that's why the entire Torah concludes, Yasher koach sheshibarta le'enei b'nei Yisrael, the Moshe smashed the luchos, because he was looking out for his people. And that's what a leader does. When you think for a moment, and the Balei Tosfos is passing like this, something phenomenal. If a person is carrying a Sefer Torah, and he sees a Jew sinning, and you have the opportunity to stop a Jew from sinning, and the way to stop them will be quickly by throwing the Sefer Torah on the floor, the Das Kanim and the Balei Tosfos is passing la halacha, you take the Sefer Torah, you throw it on the floor, you run to stop another Jew from sinning. Halacha l'maisa. And that's how we paskin based upon Moshe Rabbeinu's activities, his action and his call to quickly respond to the terrible disaster that is occurring in front of his own eyes. And that is the sign of leadership, and that halacha l'maisa is what the Das Kanim and Balei Tosfos paskin based upon what Moshe Rabbeinu did, that it's more important to save a Jew from sinning. The entire Torah is built and is created and is articulated and is written to help Klal Yisrael do what's correct, and at times you have to throw a Sefer Torah down to the floor. Bitula zu hi kiyuma. Something, the destruction of something in and of itself is the building, and are the building blocks to success. Here, that is what the Balei Tosfos Paskin, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, Paskins like this as well, that in a situation where a person sees a Jew sinning, he sees him being Mechal Shabbos, you could put the Sefer Torah, you could throw the Sefer Torah on the floor in order to stop it. You see the power of sin and the importance of stopping somebody from sin. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did, and that is Le'enei B'nei Yisrael. But let's now start going in the reverse order. We understand that Moshe Rabbeinu passed and fulfilled an incredibly difficult challenge by breaking the luchos, something that this Kenim didn't want him to do, something that he himself had negios. He didn't want the own luchos that he himself was involved with fashioning, creating, building with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be broken. Nonetheless, Moshe was forced to do it. He had to do it. But let's go back to the beginning of the story and start seeing some of the other important aspects of the luchos. When you look back in Perek Lamed Bey's Pasuk Tezvav, chapter 32, verse 15, page 496, in the Stone Chumash, the Torah here has a description of the Luchos. Take a look at this. Pasuk Tezvav, Vayifein, Vayered Moshe Menahar. Moshe turned and descended, went down the mountain. Ushne Luchos Ha'edos Biyado, and both of the Luchos were in his hands. Luchos Ksuvim Mishnei Evarehem. They were inscribed on both sides. This is one of the miracles of the Luchos. Mizeh u'mizeh him ksuvim. They were inscribed on both sides, on one side and on the other. V'haluchos ma'ise Elokim hema. The tablets were God's handiwork. U'michtav michtav Elokim hu. They were the script of God. Chorus hu ala luchos. They were actually inscribed. God's script was inscribed on the Luchos. Mefarshei HaChumash asked the question that this is not the first time we are told about the Luchos. The Luchos are about to be smashed. Take a look at the next Pasuk. Pasuk Yitzayin, Yoshua hears the sounds. He hears the voices. He hears everything taking place and happening. And only a few Pesukim later, Moshe smashes and breaks the Luchos. Mefarshei HaChumash asked that this Pasuk seems to be written in the wrong place. Why now does the Torah describe the beauty of the Luchos? The exalted state of the Luchos, the miraculous way that the Luchos are actually written. Why write that right before they're smashed? You know when this should have been written? In the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis, or immediately after the giving of the Aseres Adibros. Why Dafka now? Why are we talking about the beauty of these Luchos? They were miraculously written. They were the script of God. They were inscribed on both sides. At the moment before, a pasuk or two before, the Luchos are about to be smashed. It's incongruous. It doesn't belong here, this pasuk. It should be written in a completely different place. Why are we talking about the beauty right before the Luchos are about to be smashed? There's a beautiful sefer called the Shemen HaTov. The Shemen HaTov, Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, was the rabbi, I think, of the Young Israel of Borough Park. I got my hands on the sefer recently from an old used Svarim store. He has some phenomenal pshatim and insights into the Parshios HaShavua. And here he says something startling. Two points, the first of which I think is piggybacks on what we said, and then the second point I think is something that also is a very powerful psychological point. The first thing he says is that this speaks again to Moshe's ability to smash them now. Moshe Rabbeinu now is being told and sees and is holding, and we're reading about the beautiful Luchos. They're michtav Elokim hema, mishnei avirehem, michtav Elokimu. The Luchos were so beautiful, they were so fantastic, they were so incredibly inscribed and so beautifully written. They were a piece of artwork, they were a Kadosh Baruch Hu's own handiwork. And nonetheless, Moshe Rabbeinu was still willing to smash them. Yashir koach sheshibarta. That's one understanding that the Shemen HaTov has. And then he has a second explanation. He says, often in life, we only appreciate things at the end. Very often, it's at the last moment when we have something that's so precious, that's so powerful, and it's only at that moment when we're about to lose it that we begin to realize how much we have lost and how much we are missing. I think, you know, as parents, grandparents, you know, can appreciate this. You know, when you're, I stop myself sometimes in the house, you know, when the kids are out of control or when, you know, things are getting very exciting. And you say to yourself, you know what? In 20 years, in 30 years, in 40 years, right? I see everybody smiling. You'll say, I wish I had that noise. I wish I had that mess. I wish I had. So often in life, we begin to only appreciate things when we don't have it anymore, when it's lost. Here says Rabbi Weinberger in the Shemen Atov, we only appreciate the luchos now, right before Moshe Rabbeinu smashes them to the ground. Yes, they were beautiful. Yes, they were miraculous. Yes, Mishnei Evarehem. But look, when Klal Yisrael didn't even appreciate what they had, only the moment before Moshe Rabbeinu was ready to break them, to smash them, to throw them to the ground. It's at that moment that we begin to realize what we have lost. And of course, says Rabbi Weinberger, that this is a critical piece of human psyche to begin to realize and to appreciate what we have every moment and not wait till that last minute. We have so many opportunities in front of us, so many beautiful things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us, and we should take advantage of them every moment. And dafka here, the Torah teaches us this point immediately before Moshe Rabbeinu says, Kol Tov, Sayonara, and breaks the Luchos. It's at this moment that the Torah stresses what the Luchos were, how precious they were, how beautiful they were. But piggybacking on that comment, I'd like to go back even further to the beginning of the Parsha of the Egel and share with you another insight, this time from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, again a powerful psychological point about Bnei Yisrael. We discussed thus far, I guess, Moshe Rabbeinu's challenge in breaking the Luchos and how much Moshe Rabbeinu had to overcome what would be the natural instinct not to, right? Something we don't talk about a lot. We often just try to understand, why did Bnei Yisrael do what they do? How could Aaron have done what he did? But it's important to recognize Moshe Rabbeinu also had a significant challenge in the story of the Egel. That's been the focus of the first part of this year. And Moshe's ability to be able to overcome the trial and the tribulation and the stress of what was taking place, and indeed breaks the Luchos, and nonetheless is given great accolades for that, as we noted, that the Torah concludes by praising Moshe Le'enei Bnei Yisrael. But now let's go back and understand Bnei Yisrael. How could Klal Yisrael done what they have done? And over the years, we've shared many, many different insights, trying to understand how could Klal Yisrael, as I just pointed out, 40 days earlier, said Nasa V'Nishma, exclaimed Nasa V'Nishma, on the highest level that they could have reached, how could they have done what they have done? I'd like to share with you a fascinating, fascinating insight of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. If you take a look back in the beginning of the Parsha of the Egel, the Torah tells us in Pasuk Vav, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Zayin rather, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe. God speaks to Moshe. Leich reid, ki shiches amcha shahelesa mimitzrayim. And this Pasuk is such a sad Pasuk. Such a sad Pasuk. Hashem speaks to Moshe and says, go down. You're forced to leave the mountain because your nation has strayed. And the nation that I just released from bondage of Egypt has gone off. And look at the next words in Pasuk. Chasaru maher min ader. They have strayed quickly. Everything has unraveled. Everything has fallen apart from Aseras HaMakos to Makos Bechoros to Kriyas Yamsuf to Yetzias Mitzrayim to Matan Torah, the great miraculous events that shape the Jewish people and that shape Jewish history. That's talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, talking about Pesach, Shavuos and Sukkot, everything that is so fundamental to us and to who we are. Saru Maher Min Aderech. We have quickly fallen. And asks Rav Chaim Shmulevitz on this pasuk, how could that happen, Maher? How can we so quickly fall? How could everything unravel so fast? That's what the pasuk, Saru Maher Min Aderech. We've so quickly fallen apart. Asher Tzivisem Asulam Egel Masecha. They have built, they have made for themselves this molten calf. Vayishtachavulo, Vayizbuchulo, Vayomru Eila Elohecho Yisrael. And they have said, this is the God of Israel. Asher Ha'elucha Meretz Mitzrayim. Really? Come on. This golden calf is what took you out of Egypt? Is that really what has occurred? Is that what the pasuk says? It's exactly what the Torah tells us. Saru maher min aderech. We have quickly fallen apart. Eila lokecha Yisrael asher lucha meretz Mitzrayim. They turned to this golden calf, this molten calf. They prostrated themselves in front of it. And they said, this is the golden calf that took us out of Egypt. How do you understand this? How do you explain this? We've discussed over the years the opinion of the Ramban, the Kuzari, the Beis Halevi. I'd like to share with you, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says something again, which I think is so critical to who we are as a people, and both from a psychological, sociological perspective, as well as from a very deeply spiritual place. He says the following thing. If you take a look at the events which I've just described, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, Makas Bechoros, the Aseres HaMakos, what role did Klal Yisrael play in any of those? Nothing. They were simply passers-by. They watched. They were bystanders. They were spectators. They had no role in Yetzias Mitzrayim. They had no role in Kriyas Yamsuf. They had no role in the Aseres HaMakos. They had no role in Makas Bechoros. They had no role in the Aseres HaDibros, besides when they said Nasa V'Nishma. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says that when it comes to Torah, when it comes to mitzvos, when it comes to serving Hashem, if you're only a standby, if you're only a bystander, if you're only a spectator, if you're not invested, easy come, easy go. And if you're not showing some interest, and if you're not given some buy-in power, and if you're not investing in the stock, and if you're not putting your life on the line, but if you're just watching how everything unravels, it's very quick for everything to fall apart. That, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, is almost a psychological explanation of how we could be so surprised by what Bnei Yisrael did. He says it's not so surprising. Because when you're not invested in something, everything can go to the floor and everything can fall apart. And therefore, he says, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that's the basis of Klal Yisrael falling apart completely. We need to be invested. We need to show involvement. We need to be involved in Torah and in mitzvos. We as parents, as grandparents, as leaders, as teachers, we can't just teach by rote. But we have to get those who we are teaching to be involved themselves. If we're simply saying, this is what you should do, it doesn't work. Actions speak louder than words. And when we teach by way of example, and where there's learning that's happening, that's experiential, and of course that's the whole yisod of the Seder, that we're not teaching by simply didactically telling somebody what to do, but rather the learning is one of experiential learning, where the child sees and is actively involved in what transpires Leil HaSeder, then that child is invested, right? A good shiur is when the student or when the attendee has questions that are asked, and the attendee will then be inspired and interested to hear the answer because now the attendee is invested in the shiur. If somebody is simply talking and saying something and you're not involved, then there's not so much interest in hearing the answer. But the goal of learning is that I am invested in the class. I am invested in what I'm hearing because I'm interested. It plays a role. It plays a role in who I am and what I'm doing. And therefore, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the fall, and the quick fall, saru maher min aderech, because up until this point, Bnei Yisrael have not shown any investment. Now, that's not necessarily to their fault. That sort of just has history sort of developed. There was Kriyas Yamsuf, there was Matan Torah, there was Yetzias Mitzrayim, there was Makas Bechoros, there was the Aseres HaMakos, they're spectators, they're bystanders. But the goal, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, to concretize and to fortify, to guarantee and to assure that everything that we are doing will have longevity to it, and there will be a legacy, is to make sure that we are invested. And it's so true today in chinuch, it's so true today in communities, it's true in shuls. When individuals are invested in what is taking place, and when individuals are invested in Torah mitzvos, and are watching, and are not simply passer, and are not simply bystanders and spectators, but are rather invested, and are learning, and are involved, then Klal Yisrael will be successful, and there will be continuity to the mitzvos that we do, and to the mitzvos that we practice. And thus, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, is one of the critical elements, the critical aspects to be understood from the Egel Hazav, not only in explaining why it occurred, and explaining why the failure of Bnei Yisrael, but the quick downturn, the quick failure, and thus something to learn from this event, is easy come, easy go. Don't think that a present is better, but rather working hard for something is even greater. I think today, I think schools have understood this, that a student who is working hard toward good grades should be praised more than a student who doesn't work hard to receive a good grade. Because the student who is invested in working hard, that student is really, really playing a role in their education. And that student is really invested, and that will guarantee success long-term in their education. But a student who's not doing much, so it's very good that you're getting grades that are 100 plus throughout your career. But one day, if you're not invested in it and it just came easy, it's going to go easy too. And therefore, that is the yesod here of the egel. But let's talk about another item that's critical as well. The luchos, which were broken, which were smashed. We all know that the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayelech that these broken luchos were not left on the floor, and these broken luchos were not simply buried. But do you know where these luchos were placed? The luchos were placed inside of the Aron Kodesh, inside of the Aron, inside of the Mishkan, inside of the Beis HaMikdash, next to the second set of luchos, which were finally created and fashioned and were kept for posterity. And that the Gemara says, luchos v'shivrei luchos munachem ba'aron. The luchos and the broken luchos are both placed together in the Aron. And of course, the question is why? If these broken luchos represent, celebrate failure, if they represent trouble, if they remind us of the terrible sin of the Egel Hazav, if it's what caused Moshe Rabbeinu to break them, if it's what caused Moshe Rabbeinu to say, "Im ayin machenina misifrcha asher kasavta," Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're about to give up on this nation, and the only way that you're willing to work with them is if I am willing to have my name erased from the Torah. Is this what we want to remember? Is this what should be in the Aron? Is this what should be in the Kadosh Kadoshim? So the message, the lesson of the Shivrei Luchos being Munachim Ba'aron is to teach us the way that we began. And that is that something which is broken often is that which leads to something being fixed. If nothing ever gets broken, you can't fix anything. And what the Torah is teaching us, what the Kadosh Baruch Hu is desiring from us, why the Moshe Rabbeinu places these Shivrei Luchos, these broken Luchos, inside of the Aron, to teach us that failure leads to success. Something which is broken leads to something being built again. And this is a foundational tool of the entire Torah. That there can't be perfection. And the luchos needed to be broken in order for the second luchos to be rebuilt. It wouldn't have worked. It would be an impossibility just to have one set of luchos that were given to Bnei Israel and lasted perfectly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it had to happen this way. That it had to be broken. And in order for them to be fixed, they needed to be broken first. And that is the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu again breaks these luchos, which was a great challenge. We don't like for things to be broken. We don't like when things are shattered. It's uncomfortable. It's unfortunate. It's sad. But we have to be able to realize, to recognize, understand it's true physically, it's true spiritually. That part of the building process can only occur if there's failure. Part of the building process can only occur if there is a stop, if there is a break, if there's something that gets ruined. And thus, the Shivrei Luchos are Munachim Ba'aron to teach us this lesson. And it's the same point of all of Sefer Bamidbar. Klal Yisrael were unable to reach Eretz Yisrael quickly. They needed to make the mistake. They needed to be in the Midbar for 40 years. We're not born adults. We're born first as toddlers, then we are babies, then we're adolescents, and then we're teenagers. There needs to be a process of development. We're not like an animal. Animals, more often than not, are built whole and are complete. They grow in physical prowess and in stature. But what you see is what you get. Human beings need to go through ups and downs, highs and lows. And that's why Klal Yisrael is reminiscent of the moon. That's why we work toward the lunar calendar. We count toward the lunar calendar as opposed to the solar calendar. The sun is what it is. The sun sets and the sun rises. But the sun is always the same sun. The moon waxes and wanes. The moon gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Because that's what Klal Yisrael are about. We have to understand, even though times are hard, there are challenges, there are difficulties, we'll be pushed to the ground physically. We will suffer on many, many levels. Nonetheless, the moon continues to wax, and the moon gets bigger, and the moon gets stronger. And that's why all of the Yomim Tovim are celebrated Tesvav, when the moon is at its peak. right? Tesvav Nisan, Mirtz Hashem. Tesvav Tishrei. That's when we celebrate greatness. But we also make the bracha on the moon when? When it's a sliver. When it's very, very small. You can't make a bracha on the moon when it's too large. After day 7 from the molad, it's out. You can't make the bracha because then the moon is too big. You can only make it when it's small, when it's minuscule, when it's a sliver, because we have something to look forward to look up to, and to build and to grow toward. Thus the luchos and the shivrei luchos, the absolute fashion, the perfect, the complete, the structure that we keep for time immemorial. The second luchos, which we have accepted, which were the final luchos, the luchos of Yom Kippur, teach us that you need to be in the same proximity, in the same Aron Kodesh, the luchos v'shivrei luchos, because without the shivrei luchos, there can't be luchos. Without the mistakes, without the failure, without breaking the luchos, without the struggles, without all the difficulties we had, it's unable to be successful. We wouldn't have made it to Eretz Yisrael. We wouldn't have received the first, second luchos, and therefore that is the lesson in the luchos and the shivrei luchos munachim ba'aron together. So these are some of the various different ideas that emerge from the parsh of the Egel Azav. So much to talk about, so much to learn, so much to discuss. Mirtz Hashem, we should continue to be able to talk about it in years to come. Wishing everybody a wonderful, wonderful week.